If there are any children out there in the chairs, I invite you to come forward to the quilts with the rest of the children. Yay! Hello, kids. Once upon a time, there was a boy. He was a sensitive boy. His heart felt things very deeply. When he saw a child bullying someone else at school, he felt as hurt and angry as if he were the one being bullied. When he heard about people dying in war, even if they were people he did not know, in a country far away, his eyes would fill with tears. The day he learned that polar bears are dying because of climate change, he spent a whole afternoon curled up in his bed, hugging his old teddy bear. Learning about the suffering of others made him feel sad, helpless, and alone. One day, when he was visiting his grandmother, he shared with her his troubles. "Ah, yes," she said, "I know that sadness. I think you are old enough now to walk the paths of the Spirit." She led him through her backyard, out to the edge of the woods behind her house, where a trail began. "There," she said, "take your sadness on the paths of the Spirit." The boy followed the path into the woods. After a few minutes of walking, the path split into two. The boy chose the path on the right. Soon he came upon an old woman sitting on a comfortable-looking tree stump. She had brown skin and sparkly eyes that crinkled at the corners when she smiled. The boy told the old woman about his sadness. "Ah, yes," she said, "I know that sadness. When I feel that way, I pray. I talk to the Spirit of life and love that I call God. I lift up my sorrows, I lift up my gratitudes, and I name what I need: strength, courage, or compassion. Prayer reminds me that I am connected to something larger than myself, a spirit of life and love that is within each one of us and all around us." The boy wasn't sure how praying could really help, but he thanked the woman and continued along the path. Soon he came upon another split in the path. This time he chose the path that went off to the left. The path led to a man with pale, freckled skin and long red hair. He was lying down under a tree on a soft bed of moss, gazing up at the sky through the leaves of the tree. He sat up and smiled as the boy approached. The boy told the man about his sadness. "Ah, yes," said the man, "I know that sadness. When I feel that way, I walk in the forest. I pay close attention to every bit of living thing that I pass: the leaves, green and red in the trees, brown on the ground, the flowers, the worms and ants, the birds. I look, I listen, I smell, I feel. Practicing attention in nature reminds me that I am connected to something larger than myself, an interdependent web of life." The boy wasn't sure how practicing attention in nature could help, but he thanked the man and continued along the path. At the next fork, he turned left again. The path led to an older girl, a teenager. She had purple hair and was doing something on an iPad that said, "Using the internet to help heal the world." The boy told the older girl about his sadness. "Ah, yes," she said, "I know that sadness. When I feel that way, I do something nice for someone else. For example, my neighbor hasn't been feeling very well, so yesterday I brought her some soup and I took her recycling bin out to the curb for her. Helping people reminds me that I am connected to something larger than myself, a powerful network of human community. "Come on," she said, "I can show you." The boy wasn't sure how helping one person could help his big sadness, but he followed along. The forest opened up into a field, and in the field was a building, like this one. In the building was a chalice, like this one. And in the building were people, like all of you. As the boy spoke with different people there, he learned that they were working on all sorts of projects together for peace, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, protecting the environment. There was one group that had just done a run for biodiversity, and that group had children in it. At the end of the day, the people all joined together in a circle to sing. As the boy looked across the circle, he noticed that standing next to the older girl that he had met in the forest were three other people he recognized. The old woman who prayed, the long-haired man who practiced attention in nature, and the boy's own grandmother. They all smiled at him, and he smiled back. And the boy realized he felt connected to something larger than himself. He wasn't sure what to call it. Spirit of life and love, interdependent web of life, human community, whatever it was, he no longer felt alone. The love that had always lain beneath that sadness burst forth and took the form of hope. So may it be with all of you. Yay, thank you. The end.
Violence struck the heart of our nation. A soldier and the driver who killed him both died on Monday. Then on Wednesday, the shootings on Parliament Hill. A soldier and the gunman both killed. The context was such that the violence we experienced was amplified beyond the killing of four human beings. Our reactions were multifaceted: shock, fear, grief, anger, generalized anxiety. Some say it was only a matter of time. Not that knowing that helps. The violence stirred up questions and concerns about all sorts of things: our role in international conflict, our self-concept as a safe country, a peaceable country. Concerns, too, about whether our government will react by restricting the freedoms we hold so dear. The memory of the War Measures Act rears its head. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Violence and war continue in other nations. Just across the water, another school shooting in Washington State. We continue to worry about climate change and Ebola. And meanwhile, our own lives go on. We wrestle with personal struggles. We carry concerns about people we love. May we remember that our capacity to feel so sad and so worried about people we know, about people we don't know, about the planet as a whole, our capacity to feel so sad and so worried is proof of our interconnection, May we recall that underneath that sorrow is a powerful love, that we are all held in a larger whole, an interconnected web of love, and therein lies our strength. During our 1 minute of silent meditation, I invite you to focus on your own cares. As Mary Oliver says, let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Whether it makes you smile or makes you weep, hold that caring with gentle compassion. May this love that connects us all lead us to a place of healing, hope, and resilience.
Those of us lucky enough to live in this beautiful part of the world, the Pacific Northwest, we know something about trails and pathways. Not far from here is one of the wildest ways in the West, maybe in North America, the West Coast Trail, where you can wander for days and never see another living soul. Have any of you walked that West Coast Trail? Yeah. Well, close by, of course, are other lovely paths. Just around the corner at your beautiful Bouchard Gardens. Certainly in Goldstream and some of the other parks. And I don't know about you, but I love the path that just goes along the waterfront. That's a path that I've walked, being something of a city girl who prefers to be a little bit closer to civilization than a wild West Coast trail usually will be. Humans are path-making creatures. And pretty much anywhere you go where there are people, you will find pathways. Some paths are well-worn. I was recently in, of all places, the ancient city of Jerusalem. In that old walled city, there are tiny, tiny streets that you just know started as pathways 2,000 years ago, maybe even longer. And it's a powerful feeling to walk on streets that you know the early Jews and Christians walked upon. It's compelling to know, even though I am not a Jew or a Christian, that people searched for spiritual understanding in that very old place. For generations, really, since humans became humans, we've walked a journey, at least metaphorically, trying to understand who we are and why we're here. We've asked ourselves some hard questions, and we've tried to find answers that make sense, like that young man in Melora's beautiful story. Searching, asking, and occasionally finding some answers. I believe that the spiritual path is primarily about walking a journey and asking questions along the way. Now, I know that spirituality can be a challenging word for Unitarian Universalists. I have been one a long, long time, my whole life. I know. But really, it's just a big, old-fashioned word that one religious leader I know defines as how we walk with mystery. How we walk with mystery. That's what we've been aiming for this weekend. We've been exploring this religious concept, this spirituality thing this weekend. We've been here to imagine pathways that lead us to spirit. And I'm here today to tell you that there are some powerful ways that we can help each other along the journey. I'm aware that though I'm familiar to some of you, I'm a stranger to most of you. So let me just tell you a little bit about myself and my relationship to this topic. I grew up a Unitarian Universalist preacher's kid. I have great empathy for Athena and Demetrius. Yeah. But unlike some preachers' kids, you can ask my three sisters how they feel about it. They will have different answers. I was one of those kids that loved the church. I loved everything about it. The supportive community, the endlessly interesting and stimulating spiritual elements, coming up behind the pulpit like Athena was earlier before the service. Checking out the chalice. Well, in the 1960s and 70s, when I was growing up, religious language was not all that prevalent. You could go to a Unitarian Universalist church and never hear the word God or prayer or spirit or worship. That said, my family used religious language and did spiritually focused things quite a lot. We said grace at every dinner. We would hold hands around the table, and my father would make up a grace on the spot. It taught me how to pray. At bedtime, my mother, usually, occasionally my father, would come and sit between my sister and me in our little tiny beds, hold our hands, and we would say a standard prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. But my grandmother had added a special ending. If I should live another day, I pray the Lord to guide my way. Bless mommy, bless daddy, bless Cam, bless Peter, bless Mary. Including all the pets. We had to do all the pets. And then my father, as a Unitarian preacher, never shied away from using stories from the Bible, particularly about Jesus, in his sermons. And he was known to address prayers to Mother and Father God. Now, I know that my religious upbringing as a spiritually curious and religiously devout Unitarian Universalist may seem strange to some of you. A lot of people think that those of us in this liberal faith aren't able to be religious. We don't understand what it means to be spiritual. But I think we underestimate ourselves. In fact, I know we underestimate ourselves. Our spirituality may not be traditional. The pathways that we walk toward the mystery may look and feel different from our more conservative friends. But I assure you that we are people on a spiritual pathway. Or perhaps I should say more accurately, spiritual pathways, plural. For the ways we walk the journey of mystery vary a lot from person to person, and that's just grand. Diversity is our watchword. And I would hate to think that we would all do the same things in order to feel spiritual. I, for example, have been fed spiritually through diverse and what may seem conflicting ways. I've gained spiritual knowledge in places as different as a college classroom to a New Age support group. I've journaled, prayed, meditated, danced, and sung to nurture my spirit. And I've worshipped alone on a mountainside, though the hiking up the mountain thing, not so much. And I've certainly worshipped in a ballroom filled with people. If any of you have ever been to General Assembly, you know what I'm talking about. I've gone months
without doing anything that looks remotely spiritual and have prayed every day for weeks at a time. That variety has been extraordinarily fulfilling and good for my soul. And if I were to go around this sanctuary this morning, I'd be very surprised if my experience wasn't like many of yours. But this kind of diverse way of being spiritual goes a little bit against the prevailing view that spiritual practice is like exercise. It must be a consistent daily regimen or your spirit will wither and die. Well, because this belief is so common, I have been on occasion called to task for not being spiritual enough. Moi? But I believe there is no one-size-fits-all spirituality. Each person's spiritual life will look different from everyone else's. For many, it's true that the ideal is a regular practice that springs from one tradition and follows one path. And that may be true for some of you. I know Unitarian Universalists who pick a path and stay on it for their entire life. I mean, in terms of the way they do their spiritual work. But for others, broader boundaries along which to explore our spirits are what we need. And if you fall into this latter category, a few things I've learned along the way may be of help. While my spiritual life has embraced various sources and forms of expression, it has consistently involved three primary elements: a personal practice, a teacher or a mentor, and a worshiping community. I'm going to say that again. A personal practice, a teacher or mentor, and a worshiping community. Each of these has been important to me, both as a person and as a religious leader. At times, one seems more important than the other, but over time, they have all emerged as essential elements for giving deeper meaning and joy to my soul. These three elements are as old as religion itself, yet also fresh and alive. So let me explore them a bit with you now. And I begin with practice. Personal spiritual practice is simply that, personal. Depending on your religious background and inclinations, you will likely find some practices that provide you with the reflection necessary to deepen your sense of self, to find your place in the world. For me, journaling has been one key element. I have written in a journal, though I called it a diary when I was 10, but since I was about 10. But there are many other kinds of practices that open me and us up to the spirit. Listening to music, oh, yes, listening and making music. That's a fabulous spiritual practice. Poetry, using poetry and powerful words of religious writers to stimulate your spirit. Also, excellent meditation. Oh, my gosh, meditation is very popular in my congregation back on Bainbridge Island. Well, as long as the practice gives you the space to be who you are and where you are in that moment, it can really work. Yesterday, at the workshop that I led, I invited the participants to do some writing exercises. And if you ask any of them, they will tell you that I was a tyrant, a meanie, nasty girl, because I gave them 20 minutes to write their piece on spiritual practice. And lo and behold, they did. They are amazing. You are amazing. My 20 beautiful students out there, wave your hands so everyone can see you. You guys are amazing. Ask them to read you what they wrote, because it's really remarkable. But we could only choose one to be heard this morning, and we've invited Liz Graham to share her words about spiritual practice with you this morning.
Well, this is humbling. I will admit to being a person of noble intentions who struggles with the scheduling of routines, like exercise. So I approached the task of choosing a long-term spiritual practice with great trepidation. I looked for a practice that I could incorporate into my daily life, not an add-on or something I had to reserve a special time for. I tried setting my iPad to alert me every half hour for a mindfulness moment. That didn't work because I'd wander away from it and leave it to alert my partner to the not-so-spiritual practice of interruptions. After a pleasant interaction in the grocery store one day, it came to me that I had the opportunity each time I was there to connect with a stranger and to help their day be a little more joyful. Reach something on a high shelf for a short shopper, greet someone directly, compliment someone's choice of fruit, discuss a recipe, just to be a human being in connection with another human being, plus a smile. The spiritual practice of sharing myself and celebrating the inherent worth and dignity of another person. The ministry of Thrifty Foods is my ongoing spiritual practice.
The Ministry of Thrifty Foods. Well, if any of you have ever had the opportunity to lead a course or teach a class, particularly in the church, you'll know that the people that you engage with in this kind of work become your teachers. And that leads me to the second piece of this spiritual pathway that I believe in so strongly, which is that we need people in our lives who help us along the way. We need teachers and mentors, those people who we turn to when we are feeling lost, when we are feeling afraid, when we are feeling a little bit scared. You may know and may have a teacher who is very clearly in that role. We heard yesterday about the role that ministers play in the lives of many of you. And I'm grateful to think that as a minister, occasionally I serve as a spiritual mentor to someone. I know that I have been mentored by great ministers. In particular, I would call up the name of Leon Hopper. But there are unexpected teachers as well, people that you meet who surprise you with their insight and wisdom, and you seek them out and ask them to give you more. I had a counselor once who I didn't expect to teach me so much, but from her I learned that I had a deep spirit that I could call upon. Perhaps a child has been your teacher. My gosh, that is common. But I think it's important to remember that there are people out there who not only can love us into spiritual health, but can also challenge us to become better people. You know that teacher or mentor, the one who hits you upside the head. We need those kind of teachers and mentors too. Thank goodness that they are out there for us to find. And perhaps you may discover that you become that spiritual mentor and teacher, because never underestimate the gifts that you have to give in this department as well. Well, finding a practice and a teacher are two really excellent ways to help us develop our spirit. But there is a third, and in my view, perhaps the most important way that we can walk with mystery, and that's in the company of fellow seekers in a beloved community. So before I explore this final and critical pathway to the Spirit, let's hear the choir share a gorgeous piece that addresses this topic directly.
Thank you.
you, dear ones. Thank you. Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you, Nick. Yay. Come on right in and sit by my side. Many different ways of thinking. May your spirit be your guide. Disagreement, not division. Come and sit by my side. Many different ways of knowing, many pathways to the light, many different ways of loving. Come and sit by my side. Well, I like to think that most of us here this morning are people who like coming to church. I mean, here you are. Deeply moved, I'm sure, like I am, at least by the choir. By this thing, this strange thing called communal worship. For me, worship has always been an essential part of my life, preacher's kid. But worshiping regularly is a way to remember. It's a way to remember who you are. It's a way to remember who your people are. It's a way to remember what your tradition is asking of you, what your tradition may be demanding of you. I love to be in church. Yay, I love it. I'm happy to be here. Yeah. Woohoo. I love to worship on Sunday mornings. I love to worship in gatherings like this that are bigger than the normal thing we do on Sundays. I like to worship at conferences. I like to worship at General Assembly. I like to worship at interfaith events. I like to worship in little tiny groups. I like it all. I love it all. Because the act of coming together to celebrate life and to reflect on its paradoxes and its challenges and all the challenge and sorrow and joy that are exhibited in these candle flames. It's just fabulous. It nurtures my spirit. It nurtures us. I may go a month or so without going to church. Ministers sometimes need a little break from it. But if I go much longer than that, I start getting anxious. I want to come home. And I hope this is true for many of you as well. For ultimately, we can do all sorts of spiritual things on our own, but if we don't bring ourselves into relationship with others, we can easily forget that we aren't the be-all and end-all of the world. We can forget that our way is not the only way. We can start thinking that we know it all. We can walk a spiritual pathway just looking down at our feet and never notice the others who are along with us on this journey. Coming together into community challenges us, of course it does. As the great Quaker educator Parker Palmer once said, and trust me, this saved my ministry. I learned this like in my third year in ministry. I've never forgotten it. Community is the place where the person you least want to live with always lives. And when they go away, someone always comes along to take their place. Yeah, baby. Community is hard. Community is hard. And doing religion in community is very counterculture these days. How easy it would be to just sit by our laptops, think deep thoughts, all by our lonesome. When we're called upon to share those thoughts and to listen and to learn and to grow in each other's presence, it is, oh, so much harder. But isn't it worth it? Isn't it worth it? This weekend, we have been blessed to be in the company of a diverse group of spiritual seekers who have come together because we care about this strange and wonderful thing we call the church. We call our Unitarian Universalist faith. As we start the journey back to our own lives and our own communities, we have to go back May we remember that the pathways to the Spirit that we are called to walk invite each of us to find a practice that feeds our soul. Something that we do regularly that touches those deep places inside us and helps us to discover who we truly are, the ministry of thrifty foods. Spirit also calls us to find mentors and teachers who help us to be better people, who love us, not just for who we are, but who we might be, who we can be, and who gently invite us into a deeper relationship with the mystery that lies at the center of all creation. And we are called, we are challenged to bring our searching selves into community. It's here and in your places, wherever they may be, that we can laugh, we can cry together. It is here that we can listen and learn. We can teach and grow together. It is here that we can do that work of building a better world. The most important spiritual task that we have as human beings is to make this planet kinder, more humane, and more just. It's the least and the most that we can do. So let's get out there and do it. Amen. And blessed be.